returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He taught in the synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom, and he stood up to read. The scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him, and he began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." Jesus came to bring us freedom. And I think we're going to hear some stories about some freedom today from Deb. So I'm going to invite Deb to come up and share with us about her ministry over there in Manhattan and whatever else she feels like sharing about.
Good morning. Great to be here with you today. I was delighted when Margaret and Dale gave me this opportunity to share with you. And I'm going to start out this morning by reading a poem. Actually, it was written by one, really our first lady that was at the homestead. So I'm going to read half of the poem. It's the downer side. Know that there's a brighter side coming. But here's the first half of it. She entitled it Lost Souls of the Night. Lost girls dancing in the night, their souls searching, searching for a sign, searching for a reason, lost in the darkness, all alone, pain and suffering, men full of lust, touched by many, empty inside. Souls being bought and sold over and over, walking lifeless, what to do, where to go, nowhere to belong, nowhere to hide, souls crying out, no one can hear them. Strip clubs, brothels, hotel rooms, chain chokes, stabbed, raped, sodomized, pimps, managers, owners, customers, money is everywhere. Everyone is after money. Lost girls dancing in the night. We are their money makers. Without us, they are nothing. Because of them, we are nothing. Trapped in a world with false hope, a dead-end road. Luke 4 tells us that Jesus came to give good news to the poor, good news to the imprisoned, good news to those who are blind. He came to set the burdened, the battered, and the oppressed free. That was his mission. I mean, in Luke 4, he was declaring his mission on earth. And we as Christians, little Christ, Christ's followers, are to be about the same thing. With those who are poor and imprisoned and blinded, burdened, battered, oppressed. So that's what I'm here to talk to you about today. I'm going to talk in general, first of all, about human sex trafficking, because it is an explosive issue in our world today. It has become the number two crime worldwide. It has surpassed arms, guns, and that sort of thing. The only thing it has not surpassed yet is drugs, but it is the number two crime in the world. The definition of human sex trafficking, according to federal law, it occurs when a commercial sex act is induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or in which the person induced to perform such an act has not attained 18 years of age. So anyone under the age of 18... automatically, I mean, they cannot be arrested for prostitution legally because they are a minor. And so often our young girls in particular are arrested for this issue, and then it goes on their record and it follows them, when actually, according to federal law, that cannot even be the case. But force, fraud, and coercion. They're forced, they're tricked, lied to, coerced into this somehow. Simply put, it's having control over another person for the purpose of sexual exploitation. Someone's making money on this. Someone's getting some sort of benefit out of a human person. The average age of entry into prostitution in the United States is 12 to 14 years of age. Worldwide, it is much, much younger. There's an estimated 27 million people in human trafficking in the world. That is more than all the combined amount of slaves in all of our history. When I say it is an explosive, monstrous problem today, it truly, truly is. It's a $32 billion a year business. So you have a lot of bad people getting on board to cash in. Pornography is one of the main reasons for the increased demand. It's a simple business type situation. You have demand, so you need supply. If there was not demand, you wouldn't need the supply. The supply would dry up. So it's an issue. The average age for exposure to pornography in the United States is 8 years old. It's so simple with our computers these days. It's so secret for our young to get involved and to see things and to enter into that doorway. America is the number one destination for sex trafficking victims. The United States State Department estimates that between 600,000 and 800,000 foreign nationals, mostly women and children, are trafficked into the United States every year. 600,000 to 800,000. All 50 states have reported cases of child sex trafficking. The number of United States citizens trafficked within our country every year is 100,000 to 300,000. That's our U.S. citizens. Again, mostly children and women. 200,000 children a year are at risk of sexual exploitation. UNICEF reports that worldwide there's over 1 million children entering the sex trade every year. 1 million. Usually they or their family are looking for an opportunity or they're trying to get out of poverty. Remember that force, fraud, and coercion? They're promised things. The families promise things. They're coerced into a better life or an educational opportunity or employment of some sort, job training, whatever it might be. Under 18 years of age in Kansas, 2,300 children in our state fall victim to commercial sexual exploitation every year. Just across the border in Missouri, it doubles in number. It's 4,700. The most vulnerable young people are those in the foster care system, those from broken or abusive homes, are runaways. One out of three runaways are scooped up into prostitution within 48 hours of leaving home. They do not have the survival skills to be out there on their own, and predators are everywhere. I-35 and I-70 are main corridors for trafficking, predominantly through the trucking industry. These highways cross both directions in Kansas. You can go north or south with I-35, pretty much almost the entire country. You can go east and west with I-70, pretty much across the country. That's what makes Kansas a huge hub for this activity. In fact, we have two of the top five cities for human sex trafficking. Kansas does, of all places. Wichita is number three in the nation, and Kansas City is tied with Los Angeles as number four. There's a four-prong approach to helping those in the sex industry. The first one is prevention and awareness, and that's kind of what's happening this morning, you know, just letting you know what's going on out there. And it's a huge issue, making you aware. The second prong is rescue, and there's all kinds of groups and ministries now that are springing up all over the United States, really all over the world, to do that initial rescue work. I know that we have a team, the Homestead has a team that goes into four strip clubs in the area. We go to three in Junction City and one in Salina to reach out to the gals that are currently in the industry and just bring them some encouragement, some hope. Let them know that there's options. This isn't the only option for their life. I'm telling you, these gals are beautiful. They are smart. They're amazing ladies. And it's like, how do you not see there's more? And you don't, this doesn't have to be your only option, because so many of them feel like it is their only option. Restoration is the third prong. That's that major recovery piece where if they've been on drugs, they've been on alcohol, get their minds cleared, get the addictions, get a handle on those so that they can be clear-headed and begin to move in the right direction. So that's the third prong. The fourth prong is reintegration, transitional, and that's where the homestead comes in. We're that fourth prong. We're the prong that picks up where the recovery work has left off, and we basically do holistic wraparound services that I'll talk a little more about to help them move forward in every area of their life. We continue that recovery work. We're actually involved in all four prongs of help to ladies 18 and older who are open to that and are willing and ready for life change and to go in a whole new direction. We also put them on a new career path. A lot of times that's through job apprenticeships. That's business people in the community who are willing to apprentice our ladies in a trade, in a career path, not an entry-level job where they're not going to make enough money to sustain themselves or their children financially, but in a career path so that financially they can be stable, they can be proud of what they do, and they can continue in a whole nother direction financially sound. We have options like dog grooming, property management, dental assisting, optician work. There's just a number of business men and women who have just taken our ladies under their wing and are willing to train them. And so that's just been phenomenal. Just to give you a little bit of history about the homestead, I went to a training on human sex trafficking at our headquarters. I'm executive pastor at Westview Community Church in Manhattan. It's Wesleyan, and our headquarters is in Indianapolis. Went out there for a four-day training. It was like drinking from a fire hydrant. It was international in scope. It was all four prongs of rescue and reintegration and all of it. It was overwhelming. I came back, I talked to our women's ministry team. At the time, there was about a dozen ladies on the women's ministry team. At that time, this was at the latter part of 2009, there was only 100 beds in the United States for any women who wanted to get out of this. 100 beds. You heard the numbers I said that are 200 to 300,000 a year, 500 to 800 coming in. I mean, it's just astounding numbers, and there was 100 beds. I tell our gals that, and of course, they're just like, we need to start a safe house. We need to start a house. We need to, you know. I'm like, whoa, let's back the truck up a minute here. I've just been to a four-day training. This is massive. This is huge. So we began to pray. We actually began to pray. We began to read books on the issue to educate ourselves. We read those books together. We did prevention awareness events. For 2 years, we prayed. We actually also did prayer drives over to Junction City and over to Salina. We would just drive through the parking lots of hotels and the clubs and the juvenile delinquent center and all of those places and just prayed. This went on for 2 years. I think it was January of 2011. We had one of the gals on our team, a virus, influenza A and B, attacked her heart. She died within a few days. She was 38. She had four young children and a husband. She was passionate about this issue. Her husband knew that. And in her honor, he donated $25,000 to get this project started. Well, we'd been praying for 2 years, but we still didn't know what we were going to do. So now we had money, but we still didn't know. We continued to pray. Within 2 months, I had a couple in the church call me and say, you know, I was at the female, the gal, she had been on a prayer retreat for the weekend. And she was like, you know, I had this vision in prayer of this rental property that used to be my husband's home, where his dad had built the home back in the late 30s and early 40s. The family had lived in it. He had grown up in it. Lots of nieces, nephews, children had gone there when their kids were in K-State and all of that. But it was still in the family. And she said, I see this as being used for this ministry. Well, I hadn't even told her about this ministry. I mean, I don't even, you know, so it was like the Lord was beginning to answer prayer. We had money. We had an empty house. Didn't know how we were going to furnish the empty house. Didn't want to spend all the money on furnishings or even a big chunk of it. I knew that if we were going to offer free services for ladies that came, we couldn't spend the money on all the aesthetics necessarily. So we were going to adopt a room, have, you know, small groups, churches, businesses adopt a room, provide things. Sandy out at Feldkamp's Furniture, and I think you have a Feldkamp's here, don't you? That's one of their branches. This was in Manhattan. Our MOPS gals, mothers of preschoolers, were checking around to see if anyone ever donates a table or a chair or, you know, whatever. Sandy began to ask more questions, and she said, how about if I furnish the whole house? So she did. We took the dimensions of every room. We went to Feldkamp's, and I thought maybe we'd go to the warehouse where the dented and the scratched and the dinged, and that would have been fine. No, she had us on the showroom floor. Just, how about this? How about that? How about this? So she furnished the entire house with brand new furniture. We did an adopt-a-room program at that point, and businesses and small groups and churches got on board and made the house a home with bedding and curtains and pictures and mirrors and throw rugs and what have you. It's just beautiful, just beautiful. Very, very warm, very friendly place. We had a house mom come on board. That was, gosh, I think that was in 2012, early 2012. That too is a story in and of itself, but she's a great grandma that is 69, retired, and, you know, she's at the house 24/7. She loves these ladies as if they're her granddaughters and her daughters, and it's a beautiful thing. We opened our doors in July of 2012, so we've been in operation a little bit over 3 years. Some of the qualifications for entering the homestead is have to be 18 years of age or older, English speaking. They have had to be a survivor of sex trafficking. And they have to be ready for the reintegration phase. I told you there's four prongs. If they're not ready for the reintegration, that means they probably need a lot more recovery work and they're not ready to enter into what we have going on with the job apprenticeships or schooling and that kind of thing. So one of my main qualifiers is, do they have the want to? Do they have the want to? Are they ready? Because I tell you what, when you decide you're ready to do something and you're ready to change life up, you go after it. Like I said, we have the holistic wraparound support, but we cannot do it for them. You and I cannot change anybody. Did you know that? You can change yourself. You can't change anybody else. But you certainly can be a support and a cheerleader and love, love, love as others are going through that change process. Just like in Luke 4, Jesus came to set people free. We've been singing songs about freedom. We've been talking about freedom. And I've been in recovery ministries for many years. And I'll tell you what, I have yet to see one person who has truly changed their life from the inside out and sustained it without the power of Jesus Christ living in them. I haven't seen it yet. He is the life changer. He's the one that can come and heal the trauma. He's the one that can come and heal the mind. He can heal the spirit that's been so broken and abused and misused and harmed. He's the one. And he does it gently, and he does it usually not quick. It's usually a process. And he's quite the gentleman. And every person has their own timetable. Y'all know this because hopefully you have him in your heart and your life, and he's done an incredible transforming work in you from the inside out, whatever you've been through. What we do provide at the homestead, it's free of charge. We do not charge the ladies for living there. We buy the food. We provide transportation. We have over 40 volunteers that are just phenomenal and give of their time and their energy, and a lot of times even funds. The house mom lives there. We don't pay her. She gets room and board, and we pay for the gas and car repairs, but she's there because she feels called, and she loves and has a passion to love our ladies. We provide counseling and addiction counseling. We have a partnership with Pawnee Mental Health in Manhattan. This was probably 3 years ago. I was at a luncheon, and Robin Cole, the executive director of Pawnee Mental Health, approached me, and she said, "Deb, you know, I would love to create a faith-based initiative out of our organization." Okay. This is a government-funded organization, and they want to create a faith-based initiative. I'm like, okay, yes, we're your organization. Let's do it. So the faith-based counselors and addiction counselors, they're the ones our gals are taken to. So they do our initial assessments, and they do the therapy with our ladies. We have a partnership with K-State. We've had interns from Kansas State University. We currently have a doctoral student from K-State who specializes in trauma and is beginning this past week to do trauma counseling with our ladies, which I'm very excited about because we have not had that in the past. I think that'll be a wonderful piece. We have support group on Thursdays. A social worker leads that with our ladies who are in the program. We put two or three mentors around each of our ladies, and the mentors are just encouragers, walk alongside, cheerleaders, friends. A lot of these ladies are coming from all over the United States. They come here, they know nobody. And it's very difficult to make those kind of changes. It's very scary. So the mentors become just wonderful, wonderful assets to our ladies. We have Bible study once a week, and I lead that. We also have church. They attend church each Sunday and small group. I encourage that strongly as well. We have life skills training. We actually have that coming up on Tuesday. We hadn't done it for a while, but we're getting back in the groove with that. And then there's the job apprenticeship or the education route. Some of our ladies have gone the education route, and that's fine. I mean, we have some great places to get education. We've got cosmetology schools, we've got community colleges, we've got K-State, we've got Manhattan Christian College. We also get great interns from Manhattan Christian College. I've had a number of interns from there too. So transportation interns, mentors, babysitting mentors. A lot of our gals have their children. That's another venue that we've just began probably not even a year ago, and it's called Homestead Plus. That's for our ladies who have their children still in their custody. We can't have minors living in the house, so we put them with a family that has been screened and trained off-site, and they can live there then with their child or their children. So that family becomes a piece of the support system as well. The mom then can fully participate in our program while living off-site. Some of our ladies have their own housing, which works just fine as well. Like I said, the job apprenticeships, business people, businessmen and women who take the time, and that's just a huge blessing. I mentioned the strip club outreach. We do that once a month. We started that a little over a year ago, even though we were praying for it much, much sooner. Just a little bit of additional information. A homesteader does not have to be a Christ follower to be a part of our program. But she does need to be open, and she needs to not hinder anyone else who's pursuing Christ. A homestead gal can stay with us anywhere from 6 months to 2 years. It really will depend on her job apprenticeship, her own recovery process, schooling if she's going that route. And we continue the homesteader's network of support even after they graduate from our program. Because we are transitional, we wrap around them even when they're graduated and moving on. We have one gal in Detroit right now that it's a graduate, one that's in Manhattan, two that's in Manhattan that's our graduates. We've just started something else called the Matching Grant Fund, and that is for our graduates, because what happened with our gal out in Detroit, once she got home, that's where her children are, that's where her family is, she had old debtors come after her. And she graduated here in dental assisting, got a $15 an hour job in Detroit for dental assisting, and then an old debtor found out she was working, started garnishing her wages over $400 a month. That's hard when you're just starting out, and you're trying to start fresh, and you're trying to do it the right way. And then a big chunk of your paycheck is being taken because of stuff you'd rather forget. So what we've done, we've got this matching grant fund that I talked to the those who are coming after her, and we were able to work a deal, and so we got the garnishment taken care of. But this fund is for those types of things, so our gals don't get discouraged and disheartened and think they have to turn back to ways of making quick money or big money. We currently have one off-site homestead gal. We currently have three homestead gals in the house. We have had three graduates from the program, and we've impacted 23 ladies so far. It's been an incredible journey. It's been exciting. It's messy sometimes, but that's okay. Isn't all of our lives a little messy sometimes? And we have had gals come from all over the United States, like I said. Oklahoma, New Jersey, Georgia, Florida, Missouri, Kentucky, Illinois, Michigan, and Kansas, and then also Alaska. We hadn't had an Alaskan, and Marie's here this morning. She is from Alaska. So the ages of gals that we've had in our program range. Our very first gal was actually 15. We didn't know. We had her for like 10 days. She was a runaway from Oklahoma, being abused by her mother. So of course, once we figured out she was a minor and a runaway, we had to get DCF involved and such. But she was 15, and the oldest we've had is 57 years old. We really have our best results, I would say, with ladies between the ages of 25 and probably 45. You know, they've been around the block a few times. Some of them have been in and out of jail. They've lost everything repeatedly, a lot of them. And some of them have lost their children along the way. And they realize, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. This isn't working so great. I really want to change it up. And that's the gals that we feel like we can help, that we can assist. It is their journey. It's their recovery. It's their decision. But they have the want to, and we can wrap around them and help them make that happen. The typical pattern that I've seen in almost all of our ladies is early childhood sexual abuse, then addiction issues to deal with the pain of all of that, broken homes many times, and then getting into abusive relationships. In Romans 8:11 and following, it talks about there's power in the name of Jesus. The Jesus that God raised from the dead can live inside of each of us. And it's that power that can overcome a whole trajectory of pain and harm and abuse. And if I didn't believe it, I wouldn't be up here talking to you about it. If I hadn't seen it, I wouldn't be up here talking to you about it. It's the truth of the matter. It costs us about $300 or $350 to get a gal started, because a lot of times our ladies come with not a whole lot. So, you know, we want to get them things to get started. It's about $250 to $300 a month to sustain someone in the house, because we pay for the utilities and everything involved. It's completely donation dependent, the ministry is. I want to conclude today with the last portion of the poem, and then I'm going to have Marie come up and share just a little bit. This was, like I said, by Darlene from New Jersey, but here's the last part of the poem. This is the upswing part. You heard the downside of it. Lost girls of the night bound together, all we have is each other in this evil world. Our God hears our cries. Our God is watching. He never leaves us, never to anger. Loving us, always forgiving, always waiting. He's our Savior. He takes our pain. He fills us with the Holy Spirit. He heals our souls. With Him, our bodies are priceless. He lifts us up high. He fills us with love. He shows us a way. He shows us hope. He gives us new life. With Him, we have purpose. Our God saves us from this false world. He fills us with happiness. He gives us eternal life. I also want to read just a little paragraph that was written by one of our graduates. Her name is Pepper. She's coming back next week in to share with at least one church, possibly two, about the matching grant fund that I was telling you about. But here's what she wrote. When I think about my life before coming to the homestead, I can't believe I'm where I'm at now. I walked in with one bag of clothes and what I was wearing. I had no hope when I was in the dark place I was in. I thought I was stuck. My family had given up, and I had lost everything 10 times over due to my addictions. I came to the homestead with hopes of staying sober and left 1 year later with a career as a dental assistant, a growing relationship with God, a relationship with my children, an amazing group of new friends, and the list goes on and on. I don't know where I'd be without their help in making all of this happen. I pray all the time for more places like the homestead. You can't save them all, but you saved me. Marie, you want to come on up? I'm just going to let Marie say a few words. She's our newest homesteader, and like I said, she is from Alaska, and we haven't had anybody from Alaska, so that's fun.
And I'm an Eskimo. If you guys don't know him, you know him now.
She doesn't like the warm weather, I'll tell you that.
No, it's too hot. When I came to Kansas, I came to leave Alaska for all the bad memories, and which assumed more in Kansas. Me getting to know the wrong people. And I came into the homestead super independent, chip on my shoulders. I can do it all by myself. I was atheist probably about 9 months ago. And I started going to church, to Bible study. I've been broken for a very long time. And am I struggling now? Yes, I am. But I believe now, and I've seen the miracle that's happened. Like, it wasn't even mysterious either. I just said, God, if you exist, show me. And boom, 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 boom. It was all there. He didn't say it, but he showed it. I do believe, and I'm very struggling right now. But to have more people like Deb would really impact all these little counties. Because just it takes just one person and one church to believe in women like us. We were never believed in. I was never believed in. Yeah, I made bad choices. But here I am. It's hard because the fast money It was, you know, now I say all money is not good money. Because the fast money made me more depressed. It was a thrill to make me more depressed. And to the community, I just want to say, to reach out to somebody, someone who's not believed in. Here I am at the age of 36. I got rid of a lot of my attire that I had because it was very promiscuous. I was going to start working at the strip club. I got hired at three of them. I pray, I said, God, I guess, you know, what do I do? Not even 2 hours later, she calls me. I now have a home, and I am working hard, still struggling, but I at least have never had women or so many people in my life to care for me because I came, been on my own since I was 14, and, you know, was raised in a village all the way up north. Way up north, by Barrow, if you guys know where that is, at the top of Alaska, kind of. It's where I come from, and it wasn't easy growing up, but I've made a lot of choices where I've allowed myself to hinder myself, because it's all in your head. You're either going to want to do it or you're not going to. I'm going through it, and yes, it's hard, but the journey with her is amazing. I've never had no love like this before in my entire life. Never had love. Don't even know what love is. I'm still figuring out what love is to this day. And it's hurting me inside to know what love is now. And at the age of 36, I'm figuring out what love is. Just reach out to women who really want it. Anywhere. Because that's all it takes is for someone to believe in you. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindsay, you want to come up and help me pass out the brochures and the newsletter, and then I'll turn it back over to Bart.
I think I have the mic on now, Jeremy, so. You didn't hear me before, it's because I didn't turn the mic on, so. No. Too many other things on my mind, I guess.
No, oh, they're stuck together. Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Deb and Marie, for sharing, and ladies for coming. It's quite a ministry you have there. In my Sunday school class, we started studying a book called Radical by David Platt about how Jesus calls us to a radical life of giving up what we have and helping the poor and the needy. And this is a prime opportunity to give up what we have and help poor and the needy. So in closing this morning, we're going to be singing number 315, Freely, Freely. So please stand with me and join it together as we sing this song.
God,
I hope as you leave today, you will remember some of the statistics that Deb shared with us, how many, many people are hurting in this world, and